The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, conversing with him. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make three tents here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud cast a shadow over them. And then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell prostrate, and they were very much afraid. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Rise and do not be afraid." And when the disciples raised their eyes, they saw no one else but Jesus alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus charged them, "Do not tell the vision to anyone until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning, everyone. I'm pleasantly surprised. You know it's 7 o'clock. I certainly did. I was a bit worried this morning because I have one of these fancy clocks a friend got me, and I don't know how to reset it for the time change, so I wasn't sure that I would make it. So I got up at 5. And I'm grumpy, so... Actually, our spirit should be raised by the readings and the feast. Last Sunday, we were in the desert, the temptations. This Sunday, we're on the mountaintop. And for the Jews, the mountaintop is always associated with Sinai in the desert, where Yahweh, God, revealed himself to Moses on the mountaintop and got the Ten Commandments. So mountains are places of revelation. As I look through the readings, I think you could state rather briefly several things. I hear a little echo here. The three things that I would like to mention. First, when you look at the book of Genesis, Abram, about to be transformed himself, transfigured with the name Abraham, is told to go forth to the land from your kinsfolks, your fathers, to the place I'm going to show you. Imagine leaving on a journey, elderly, and not knowing where you're going. No railroads, no airplanes, no cars, no cell phones to keep in touch with whoever's back home, no insurance policy, you know, and leaving and going forth. Whether he was 75 or not, it says he was advanced in age. That's pretty amazing. And as much as scholars can do it, they can say that he probably started out in what is present-day Kuwait, southern part, Mesopotamia, it was called in those days, went far enough north almost to Turkey and then ended up in the land of Canaan, which became Israel, the land of the Jews. So Abraham makes this journey, a considerable journey, and he's told the promise at his age with no children, neither he nor his wife, Sarah, have any children, all communities of the earth shall find blessing in you. Right. Right. If anyone had reason to say, "Hey, this is not going to work out," I think it would have been Abraham. And the gospel is, or the second reading from Timothy, is a source of encouragement, which we need as we're trying to work our way through Lent, if we're serious about, oh, this is just another Lent. Or if we're serious about, maybe this Lent, something's really going to happen. So it goes on and says, bear your share of hardships for the gospel with the strength that comes from God. Lovely reading, lovely sentence. Bear your share of hardships. Nobody promised us a rose garden, right? I'll come back to the rose in a minute. But the strength that comes from God and from one another and through each other and through our children and children's children. Sometimes they're a source of great worry and suffering, and other times great joy. The grace bestowed on us in Christ, listen to this line, grace bestowed on before time began. It suggests that we were in God's eye before the creation of the universe. Now again, can you believe that? I do. And that's because I'm so naive and insecure. That's why I believe these things. I just can't quite hold on without that. So you have the journey, and then you have some strength and so on. But the heart of the feast this day is the gospel. A few comments about the gospel, at least, to bring it out. Peter, James, and John, the big three, somehow it was the inner circle, brought them up to a high mountain, as I mentioned, a place of revelation. He was transfigured before them. Transfigured. Remember, Moses went to the high mountain, and he saw Christ, God, and transfigured, and so bright that he had to turn away. God said, let me walk by you, but you're only going to see my back. It's too much light. The Jews often said, no one can see God and live. Christians will say, since God became human in Jesus, you can see God and be transformed. So here it says he was transfigured before him, and who joined with him? Elijah and Moses. Moses was the person that did the Exodus, which led the people out of Egypt. Elijah was the great prophet who kept the people faithful. So you've got the law and the prophets. And they're talking with Jesus. And then what happens? Peter immediately sees them and says, man, I got to take a picture. Let me build it. I'm going to freeze this one. And it's almost as if Jesus says, no, you can't freeze this. This is an ongoing thing. As soon as you try to grab a hold of a joy and keep it forever, it dissolves. Let the joy be there, and then it'll move on. It's asking for a certain maturity. And then an amazing thing happens. So Jesus is there talking with Moses and Elijah, and just after Peter wants to grab this and hold on to it, it says a great cloud came over them, and they were afraid, and they fell prostrate on their faces. The next thing they know is that Jesus comes in a voice. This is my son. Listen to him. There's a shadow over them, and he wants them to be listening to him. It's not, you don't see, but you want to hear. You want to listen. It's not primarily a physical vision. It's a spiritual hearing that is central. And they were very much afraid. And then a beautiful image, Jesus came and touched them. So they were prostrate on the ground, frightened. And then the vision somehow disappeared. And Jesus came and he touched them. He didn't say, get up, you bums. He touched them. Didn't hit them. Touched them. And raised them up. Rise and do not be afraid. Even though they saw no one but Jesus alone. And then finally says, don't tell anyone about this. Well, if you go back, we're at the beginning of chapter 17 in the Gospel of Matthew. If you go to chapter 16, you have the great statement, who do people say that I am? Jesus, finally Peter says, you are the Son of the living God. Great, rah, rah. And the next moment, Jesus gives the first prediction that he's going to go and suffer and die in Jerusalem. Peter says, "Oh, no, I won't hear any of that. No way." And he goes from God to goat in no time flat, where he pronounced Jesus' son, and now he doesn't get it. Now they have another source of encouragement on the way to Jerusalem, this transfiguration, and he says, "I still know you don't quite get it. So don't tell anybody, because you're not even going to begin to understand this until I die and rise from the dead, and it'll still take time." I think all of us, whatever our age should be, realize, A, the best is yet to come, and B, there are a number of things that we might not know now that'll just open up on the way. So I want to make 3 points. The first one is about the journey, second about the vision of faith, and finally, where do we find the strength for all this? The journey, this is a word that's used a lot of times now to talk about the spiritual life. And if it is the good word that I think it is, it suggests it's a process. It's over time. I turned 74 this month. No, last month. See how time flies? And I thought to myself, well, my goodness. I didn't say to myself, where is it all gone? I felt great gratitude. And things are hardly done. I still feel there's a lot that I'm called to do. I'm not sure what it is. 10 years ago, not to get too personal here, 10 years ago, after 30-some years in Dayton, at the University of Dayton, having served as provost, then made chancellor, and all this, finding a lot of friends, a lot of joy, I get called to a foreign land, California. If you don't think that's a culture shock, I'm in my 60s. To start out on a project that a lot of people thought could never happen, and not knowing whether it would happen, not at a Catholic university, but at a great university, to try to see if it could be done. I don't want to set myself up as an example, but I can tell you, it's been a challenge. That's a challenge. So here we have the journey. Do we have clarity? Boy, not very often. Does the unexpected happen? It sure does. Sometimes it's pleasant, and sometimes it's not pleasant at all. The first diagnosis of cancer or something like this really can be a jolt. So the journey is there, and we're on it. We can't control it. We can't freeze frame it like Peter wanted to do on the Mount of Transfiguration. Remember, what they were going to go through, all Peter, James, and John, we know were eventually executed because of their faith. All right? So nobody promised them a rose garden. Yet, the rose, are you familiar with the song, The Rose? Remember that? Remember the lyrics? Some say love. You know how it goes on? Let me read you the lyrics. I was thinking about it, and I found a copy of it last night. I think it's really something. Some say love, it is a river that bends the tender reed. That's right out of scripture, really. Some say love, it is a razor that leads your heart to bleed. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a flower, and you, it's only seed. It's the heart afraid of breaking that never learns to dance. It's the dream afraid of waking that never takes a chance. It's the one who won't be taken who never learns to give. It's the soul afraid of dying that never learns to live. When the night has been too lonely and the road has been too long, when you think that love is only for the lucky and the strong, just remember, in the winter, far beneath the bitter snows, is a seed that with the sun's love in spring becomes the rose. I don't know about you, but that comes as close to a profound and poetic expression of the gospel of almost any secular song that I know. Maybe it's not right to call it a secular song. That's the journey. What about the vision? I would just like to say one thing about the vision. It's neither optimism nor pessimism. Both optimism and pessimism are naive. Optimism means it's all going to turn out fine. At the foot of the cross, that would hard to say that. And pessimism means everything's gone down the tubes. And both of them basically predict what the future will be rather than live the present and stay on the journey. The Christian virtue is hope. Hope. No matter what happens, I continue to hope, and that keeps me on the journey. It's nice not to be, you know, glum, you know, and everything is going to hell in a handbasket or something like this. Yeah, I mean, you don't want that. And there are rough times. But hope is the virtue that is most important for the journey. And finally, what about the strength? If you notice, the gospel says, listen to him. Listen to Jesus. No one listened to Jesus. No one listened to Jesus better than Mary. Right in the front row. Exactly. And you know what she did? She not only listened, but she pondered these things in her heart. Ponder, and pound, the British pound. The word, the British pound, comes from medieval English that says you weigh something. You take it and you ponder it and you weigh it. And Mary did this better than anyone. And she remained faithful right to the foot of the cross. I can't even picture her joy when her son was risen, nor her sorrow captured by the Pietà in the Vatican. Just extraordinary. So the challenge then is to be able to actually listen and be grateful despite what the journey might hold. I'd like to read to you one other text and then wrap it up. This is from a still alive, I met him once, he's now related by marriage to me, and that's Brother David Standelrost, a Benedictine. Any of you know the name? He put it this way. He says, the difference between happy and unhappy people is that the former, the happy people, find meaning even in suffering, while for the latter, the many things that they could enjoy remain meaningless. And how is this? Because he says, the great religious act is to say yes with a grateful heart, even when we cannot understand, when everything seems totally absurd. The very word absurd gives the whole situation, because it really means being deaf, absurd. Look at the root, Oxford Dictionary. When we say that something is absurd, what we have really made a statement about ourselves. I'm absolutely deaf to what this situation wants to say to me. That's the problem. He says, we tend to think that happy people are grateful because they got what they like. In reality, it's grateful people who are happy because they like what they got. And those of us who are happy, they like what we got. We got the love of Jesus. That's very profound. So what does all this mean? I would suggest that we should not be afraid on the journey. We can't try to control it like Peter did. We need to be sustained like Abraham by the promise that was made, even in the darkest moments. We need to learn to Jesus as Mary did. And I think we remember best of all the last line of the song, The Rose, that every one of us is a seed that with the Son's love, Jesus, in the spring, this time of the year, becomes the rose.